The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week. Before we dive into today's topic, I want to apologize for last week's EDU show. Those of you who jump right on the download there might have it set up to auto-download. Last week's EDU show, the wrong audio file got linked to the release, so there was an older show instead of the second half of the Robert Merton article that we were breaking down. That has since been fixed, so if you got the wrong file, if you just force a fresh download on the EDU episode from last week, you'll be up to date with what should have been there. So we apologize for that. We'll try to prevent that from happening in the future. The Q&A show from last week was fine, so it was just the EDU show from last week. Today's show, we're moving on to a new EDU topic. Periodically, Jim goes to a training session, a deep training exercise with the Ed Slots program. And as part of that program, the advisors that attend that program get a quiz after they're finished to kind of test their own knowledge. I don't think they get a grade or are judged by the results of the quiz, but just kind of a fun quiz. And he brings those here to the podcast, those quiz questions, and we go over them here because they're a wealth of information, those quiz questions, because it's fun, helps you test your knowledge. He tests my knowledge in a way because I haven't done the quiz yet. And so he springs the questions on me and I do my best to try to answer them. And then he adds corrections or the feedback that came from the Ed Slot program, generally on the topic of IRAs and all the plethora of rules and regulations, penalties, and everything that goes along with the IRAs. So that's what we're going to do today. So Jim has the pile of questions. I'm sure we're not going to go through all of them, but that's where we're headed today. So Jim, take it away, I guess.
Thanks, Chris. Welcome, everybody. I am Jim, obviously, of the Retirement and IRA Show, and you were just listening to my cohort, Chris, giving a little brief intro. For anybody who's new, you might not have had this type of EDU show before, but Chris is right. I do belong to the Ed Slot program. I think I'm pushing 12 years now, Chris. I forget. It's been a hell of a long time that I've been in that program, and I'll probably stay in for another 5, maybe 8 years. I think when my role officially changes yet again at the firm and I begin segueing out, I may drop the Ed Slot program at that time, assuming one of the juniors step up. But if nobody steps up, I'll probably stay in. But anyways, part of what we do is we meet twice a year. In fact, I'll be meeting, I think, November 5th, 6th, and 7th. Yes, November 5th, 6th, and 7th. We're meeting in Austin, Texas. So I will actually be flying back from Ohio. I'll be in Ohio a couple of weeks before that. And I'll stop in at Austin on the way home, do the Ed Slot training, and then continue home before promptly leaving the very next day to Utah, if everything works out, to go on an elk hunt the following day. So I'll land on a Saturday in Friday in Colorado, leave Saturday for Utah, hunt Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and come back Wednesday. So it'd be kind of a busy stretch for me. But anyways, inside the Ed Slot program, we study IRAs, retirement accounts, 401ks, a little bit of estate planning as it pertains to retirement. And we do just kind of a lot of brain trust work as a group. An individual in-depth work with Ed Slot. We don't get Ed as much. He's always there, but similar to me on a much smaller basis here at my firm, Ed is definitely prepping for retirement. We can all tell that. And his minions, he's got three minions. I call them minions. He calls them consultants, but they do the majority of the talking. But Ed will get up on stage occasionally now, but not nearly as much as he used to. So what we have been doing, I think for a couple of years now, Chris, is I take this semi-annual exam. It's an open book exam. It's not really designed to test us. It's designed to get us to really test ourselves and read in the manual. He gives you even the section in the manual, the page range, if you will, that you can find the answer if you go there and read it. He's just trying to drill some of this deeper into our heads. So yes, there's nobody hanging over our heads. And I'm late in doing this by, I think, about a month. It's I get nasty grams if I'm more than 2 months. And I know that because I once was more than 2 months before I did the exam. But he's just, you know, do it when you have a chance. And his whole point is to encourage us to study and learn, which is the whole point of his group, if you will. So I like to challenge myself on these 20 questions and answer them without using the manual. And I did again. And I got three wrong this time, Chris. I'm not sure if we'll do the three that I got wrong. With this 20 questions, I don't know if we're going to, we're definitely not going to do all 20. I don't think we're even going to do 17. I'm thinking this might become a two-parter. More so, not just to play along with Chris and test them, folks, but to then dive deeper into the nuances around what the question covers. And I think that's what makes it different. It's not just, oh, here was the first question, here's the second, here's the third, and not provide any context around the answer. I want to provide that context around the answer and dive deeper in, as I'm sure Chris will as well. So anyways, that's what it is. I just want you guys to play along at home. Whether you get it right or wrong, doesn't matter. It's the context surrounding it and get an idea of the rules and regulations around it that I think make this a more interesting endeavor on the EDU show. But that said, Chris, I'm going to do it with a little twist this time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
You don't have to... Let me open the email that gave me this idea. So I want to thank someone who sent an email on Wednesday, June 25th. It begins, "Hi, Jim. Help me in on those who do not like ChatGPT playing against Chris on a weekly basis. If you remember, I thought it was a good idea. Y'all voted me down. On the state trivia, have Chris play against chat on the state trivia." That got voted down. I listened to the listeners. One woman sent an email to me, and that got the ball rolling, I think. And then I got several more emails. So in a roundabout way, I thank her for sending that email. She was very, very taut and to the point. She had a very firm email. That might have rubbed me a little bit the wrong way, but she was right. And then y'all voted in and supported her. For the most part, there were some people who wanted chat. And lately, Chris, I literally have received three emails, not just to bring back chat to some degree. I think it's people trying to learn how to use it and enjoy having it involved a little. So it kind of ties into this email that came back way in June, because he continues, "My dislike comes from chat's higher energy and environmental costs." So this is somebody clearly against AI or any type of AI because of all the power that it consumes. "However," he continues, "there may be some value here for ChatGPT. Why not have it play against Chris on your next Ed Slot semi-annual Q&A session? And let chat use the full internet." I'm curious. Oh,
that'll actually be a disadvantage for chat because there's so much misinformation.
So much misinformation, exactly. I'm curious about, because chat constantly gets things wrong. I told you, I think it was last week or the week before, a gentleman in Florida, I don't want to use his real name, we'll call him George, but he and I get together literally every time I'm in Venice. He lives in, I think, south of Sarasota or in Sarasota. I'm not quite sure where, but not far from my mom's house. And we try to get together for lunch. And anyways, he had this huge debate with chat because it totally screwed up the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and the stuff that it was telling him. So anyways, he continues, I'm curious about how much chat can approach or equal an experienced planner. My expectation is it will have lots of mistakes and hallucinations because it's going to access the internet with all of its misleading advice, just like you were saying, Chris. Yes. But it would be interesting to see how many it can get right or wrong against Chris. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, using ChatGPT just once or twice a year can satisfy everybody's curiosity about chat without going overboard for those of us like myself who really don't like it. And again, folks, he doesn't like it because of the high energy and environmental costs. Unfortunately, I don't think anything there is going to change. AI is not going away because of that. More power plants will be built because of it. And that's the discussion that goes way beyond the scope of this podcast.
Yeah. For those of you who don't realize, it's really a power hog. And I kind of get his point. It's very inefficient right now. Hopefully that will improve over time. I compare it to like taking your monster truck to the grocery store to pick something up. A lot of people are using chat for just mundane Google search style inquiries. And it's total overkill, right? It is particularly wasteful when you're doing it that way. If some of the deep research stuff that it does, then you could, I think, make a better argument as to the power versus benefit trade-off. But boy, there's a whole lot of blown off waste energy right now in it. I agree. And I'm not an ultimate, an extreme tree hugger or anything like that. I realize we have to generate power and all that. And so I agree with his comments that it's pretty sloppy right now.
Yeah, but my take is AI. And when we say chat, I'm talking about AI in general.
Yeah.
Whether that's any large language model being offered, there's about half a dozen of them now, Gemini, Copilot, Perplexity. There's many out there. I'm sure there'll be some winners, some losers, a lot of mergers and acquisitions as the next 20, 30 years transpire. I'll be dead and gone in 30 years probably, but this is not going away. It's only going to embed itself deeper and deeper into society. But I truly feel for this cost of energy, it's going to provide far more good than bad to humanity as a whole. Unfortunately, I also feel it's going to be abused, misused, and cause a lot of bad, especially in cases of fraud with what AI can do, replicating people just by having a recording of their voice. It's scary. Yeah. It's going to be a lot of good and a lot of bad, but it's not going away, and I encourage you to learn it. Even if it means taking your monster truck to the grocery store to get milk, I now open chat, not all the time, but even if you use a Google search now, Chris, it leads in with a Gemini large language model answer that you can see. It's right at the top, and you can go into AI and get a plain language conversational answer if you want, or the more traditional Google search answer. So it's really being embedded everywhere. Okay, enough of that. Let's get to the test, if you will. So again, it's 20 questions. We're probably going to answer maybe 10, 12 is pushing it. I'd say somewhere between 8 and 10. It's going to be a two-part show. I can already see that, more so because the intro took longer than normal. It's a pithy intro usually. So if you're a new listener, Chris and I usually jump to recording, I think, within seconds of starting. So it's very rare for us to be...
Well, let's not set inappropriate expectations.
Exactly. If you're a new listener, trust me, the next show, we're going to dive right in. There's no banter. I can't stand banter. Just we're pithy and to the point and move on. Okay. I have pre-programmed chat, so it knows already what's going on. But just so everybody knows the rules, including you, Chris, here's what I told chat. You are to act as an expert in IRA rules and regulations, 401k simple plans, IRAs, and governmental 457 plans. All the rules, all the regulations, as well as general overall retirement planning knowledge and expertise. We're going to play a game on my podcast. We will be recording where you and my podcast co-host, Chris, will be asked the exact same question, covering a variety of retirement planning and IRA rules. Both of you will be given the exact same answers. You will be allowed, you, meaning chat, will be allowed to research your answer online, but Chris is not. He is limited to just using his knowledge and memory. The question will either be in the form of a multiple choice question with answers provided or a true and false question. The only rule you have to follow is you must choose one of the answers provided. You cannot create your own answer. And obviously, if it's true and false, you are limited to saying either true or false. Let me know if you have any questions with these rules. It came back and gave a summary. I won't read the whole summary, but it nailed it, Chris. It knows exactly what it's doing.
Okay.
Although it did say at the end, if you want, I can respond in a consistent, energetic, but slightly competitive tone to Chris in an effort to add fun to the podcast. Or if you'd prefer, I can be more robotic. Just let me know. I'm going to let it do the consistent, energetic, and slightly competitive tone.
So now you're going to have it taunting me and...
Yes. In other words, taunt Chris.
And trash talking me.
Actually, I'm going to say that just like that. So you have to tell it what to do, folks. So I'm going to say, yes, you can provide a competitive, energetic, and consistent tone to taunt and trash talk Chris a little bit with your answer.
Wow. Okay.
There you go. That sets the rule. Perfect. My challenge accepted. Tell Chris he better bring his A game because I'll be bringing all the IRS code, obscure plan rules, and enough retirement knowledge to make Ed Slott himself sweat. And don't worry, I'll keep the energy high and the tone sharp and the taunts friendly, but there.
Okay.
All righty. Okay, so let's get to the first question. And I guess, Chris, what I'll do is I'll read it once with my little iPad dictating it right into chat and then send it in so I don't have to say it once to you and once to it.
That's a good idea.
Okay, that's what I thought. I thought that would be a good...
Yeah.
You won't believe it.
Or you could always copy and paste it right into chat, too.
Well, chat is on my iPad and the other thing is on my laptop. Oh. I didn't think of that. Maybe next week when we do part two, I'll do that.
Okay.
Okay.
Question number one.
Okay. So I'm just going to read the question here first, Chris, before I do anything. Question number one. Which of the following statements about IRA catch-up contributions is false? For 2025, they are limited to $1,000. B, they are only available for those who are age 50 or older. C, they are indexed for inflation. Or D, they are only available for traditional IRAs and not Roth IRAs. Again, which one of those statements is false?
I'm ready.
Well, wait a minute. Chat's not.
What do you mean?
Oh, well, it's ready. I just hit enter. I didn't. Okay. I have to shut up and then press the send key. It answered instantly. It said, okay, here's chat. Mm-hmm. We're starting with a juicy one, Chris. What? I hope you stretched, buddy, because this one's got a little twist built in. Okay. So how do you think I should do this? Give your answer.
I need
first.
To answer first, just so people trust that I'm not changing my answer when I hear chat. I'll offer that up as proof. So it's clearly D as in dog is the false choice.
Do you want to expand on that a little bit, or do you want me to go to chat and get its answer?
Well, let's get his answer first.
So chat said, let's break it down. They are limited to $1,000. That's been true for years and remains the limit for 2025. They are only available for those age 50 and older, so that rules out B. You have to be the big 5-0. They are indexed for inflation, so that rules out C. But here is a trick answer, and the one that I think Chris will fall for. This used to be false, but starting in 2024, due to Secure Act 2, the $1,000 IRA catch-up is now indexed for inflation in $100 increments. Mm-hmm. So for 2025, this is a true statement.
Correct.
So the only real answer is D. That is my final answer. They are only available for traditional IRAs and not Roth IRAs. This is blatantly false. The IRS is an equal opportunity contributor. Now, it's not the IRS here, folks. Congress creates this. IRS doesn't mandate
right.
that catch-up contributions can only go here or can go both or can go there. Congress set the rule. IRS enforces and interprets the rule. So chat was getting a little cocky there, Chris, mm-hmm. and kind of misspoke. The IRS is not, in this case, an equal opportunity contributor. Congress is.
Yeah.
Catch-up contributions are allowed to be made to both traditional and Roth IRAs. My final answer is D.
Well, I will and say, that his elongated answers – saves me a lot of words, which is probably good because I have a sore throat. And as long as chat gets it correct, I think we let chat embellish it like you just did because it was did a nice job.
Yeah, it saves me having to go provide all of that. So I like it as well.
That was nice.
But it's going to call some smack now, Chris.
Oh, no.
It says, Chris, my man, don't let the Roths get you rattled. I'm just here inflating my leads like the IRS inflates catch-up limits. He is wrong again. It's not the IRS. I'm going to tell him he's getting a little too cocky. It's Congress.
Plus, he's not taking a lead because I got it right too.
Exactly. So let me tell it that.
And I took a lot less time to answer.
Chris got the answer correctly. And I do want to point one thing out. You're talking a little smack here. You're sounding a little cocky, and that's fine. But it's not the IRS that allows catch-up contribution. It's not the IRS being an equal opportunity contributor, as you put it. And it's not the IRS that inflates catch-up limits. It's Congress. Congress sets the laws. The IRS just interprets them. Okay.
Okay.
Just wanted to tell it that.
Thanks for smacking him down like that for me.
Exactly. Touché, Jim. First, hats off to Chris for landing that hit. But you are absolutely right to call me out. Congress writes the laws. The IRS just interprets those rules through guidance.
Yeah.
Okay, so nice. I smacked him down for you, Thank Chris. You. How's that?
That was a pretty easy one to start off with, which is good. Get us kind of warmed up.
I thought so. And and again, folks, I don't have to expand, and neither does Chris. In this particular case, chat was right on all of the little nuances, so we're not going to dive any deeper into that.
Yeah.
So let's get to the next question. Same vein, Chris, if you will, catch-up contributions. Okay. Which of the following statements about super catch-up contributions is true? They were effective starting in 2024. B. Plans are required to make them available. C, they are available for employees who turn age 60 to 63 during the year. Or D, none of these are true as they pertain to super catch-up contributions. Okay,
I'm pretty sure
stopped recording. And it's gone. What do you think it is? All jokes aside, before we get to chat's answer.
Yeah, I think it's C. Thinking? I think C is the true one.
And do you want to expand on that or not?
Well, B, catch-ups are allowed but not mandatory. So that's why B is not true. employers in their plans don't have to allow catch-up contributions. There's a lot of features to retirement plans, employer-sponsored retirement plans, that are allowable but not mandated. This is one of them. I don't believe is true because I don't think they started till 2025. But C is true because there's that little carve out for people turning 60, 61, 2, and 3, not turning 64, 65, not turning 59, that are allowed to do these super catch-ups, we call them. So I believe the answer is C, unless I am having a brain glitch, which is possible because I am human.
Nope. You are correct on all counts. And I haven't even looked at chat yet. Literally, folks, I haven't. So Chris is correct. The catch-up contributions, keep in mind that they're only available, as Chris rightly pointed out, between the ages of 60 through 63. So you could make a catch-up contribution at age 59 if at the end of the calendar year, the IRS is going to look at December 31st. They don't look at your age on the date you allegedly make a catch-up contribution. They're going to look at your age on December 31st of the year you made the catch-up contribution, the super catch-up contribution. You have the regular catch-up contribution. This is a new Secure Act 2, quote-unquote, super catch-up contribution, which I pointed out to you before is the one of the many stupid things Congress does as it relates to retirement planning. You're going to let somebody who's 60, 61, 62, and 63, and who is probably getting close to retirement, if not already there, so to speak, you're going to make a contribution, a catch-up, super catch-up at 63, the year I retire, or something like that. They should be allowing people who are in their 20s, maybe people who just entered the workforce, the first 5 years in the workforce, you can make super catch-up contributions, or your 10th anniversary in the workforce, or between age 30 and 35, if they want to limit the ages, which is stupid in and of itself. But they should be allowing young people to put more money in 20, 30, 40 years from retirement. Why is that, Chris? If you really want to help someone retire, is letting some old dude in their 60s, and that's me, folks, I'm 62, letting some old dude in his 60s put a couple of extra $1,000 in going to make a whole hell of a big difference in my retirement? Or maybe letting someone 30, 31, 32, 33. What says you?
Well, think of it this way. Your retirement savings that are available to you at retirement are a function of two things. Money that you didn't consume, right? You delayed consumption by taking some of the money you earned and you saved it instead of spending it. So money that you, out of your own pocket, decided to set aside in combination with the growth. The longer a period of time there is between the contribution you make and when you need it, obviously the greater chance of substantial growth. So it's all that growth that's really benefiting people. It's what helps people retire without having to set aside vast, vast amounts of their income because they've got a friend, they've got a contributor, if you will, helping them out. And that contributor is the return that you earn on those investments over time, the compounding over time, the magic or power of compounding. Well, compounding only has power if it's got time to work. And if there's no compounding, now it's just the benefit of you setting aside the money, which has some benefit, obviously. You didn't spend money when you were 60, so you could then spend it when you were 65. There's some benefit in that. But there's really no opportunity for long-term compounding in there. If you really want to help people retire, get them to be putting money in more early. That's what is going to show the greatest impact on their future retirement.
Absolutely. And maybe allowing people to do it in their 20s is too early. And in your 20s, you're still not thinking, I'm going to be old someday and retire. But by 40, it definitely is there. Maybe 40 to 45, they allow this. And they double or triple from the amount that they're allowing. That would allow the catch up. That would allow people who are 40 to sit there and say, wow, did I party my hiney off in my 20s? And not really take this serious in my 30s because I was raising my family. But goodness, my kids are in high school now. I see the writing on the wall. God, I wish I could get more money in these retirement accounts. That's when it would matter more. But letting someone between 60 and 63, and what are these stupid rules, 60 to 63? It's not going to make a hill of beans to improve their retirement. I'm sorry, it's not. There's just not enough time for the eighth wonder of the world, compound interest, to take effect.
Yep.
But anyways, I digress. You can be as young as 59, so long as you're going to be 60 on December 31st. Conversely, you can be 63. Like next year, I will be 63. The year after that, I'll still be 63 until July 24th. That does not mean I can make my super catch-up prior to July 24th. It means I can't do it, period. Even though I'm still 63 when I might want to put it in, I will be 64, some random number that all of a sudden in the eyes of Congress means I can't catch up anymore. It's like a screwed. Hey, you're 64, you didn't save, you're screwed. That's essentially what they're saying. So keep in mind, even though the ages are 60 to 63, if you will, you could be as young as 59, but you can't be in the year you turn 64, even though you might be putting the money in at 63. Right. So just keep that in mind. And how does it work? What is it? Let's add a little bit of juice around this. Before I haven't even looked yet at chat's answer. I closed my iPad down literally, so I don't know what it's going to say. But how do they come up with this 11,250? It's essentially 150% of what the then current catch-up contribution to a plan is. This doesn't apply. There's no super catch-up contribution to an IRA, which further infuriates me.
Yeah, for sure.
What if you're in your 60s and you're working for an employer that doesn't have a 401k? Rare, but there could be. Maybe you're working part-time then, and you're not eligible to contribute to your employer's 401k because you're part-time. Why can't you put a super into the IRA? Well, you can't. So anyways, back to this. Essentially, I'm going to keep the rules simple. It's 150% of the then current catch-up contribution limit for anyone else who doesn't fall between the age of 60 and 63. Right now, that's $7,500. So you take $7,500 and multiply it by 150. And that comes to $11,250. Here's the key, folks. The super catch-up isn't $11,250 plus the $7,500.
Right.
The super catch-up, if you will, is $11,250, which is comprised of the regular catch-up of $7,500 and a 50% more than that, hence the $11,250. When this rule first came out, and I was reading a very brief article on it, I initially thought, wow, $7,500 plus an additional $11,250. Yeah, they are letting people catch up. I still thought the same thing. You need to be letting people in their 30s and 40s put that in. But now you're getting to some real money in addition to your deferral limit. Wow. Until I read a little bit more and realized that's not what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're not really. So what's the, I don't have my calculator here. And I could do the math in my head, but I can't think and talk at the same time anymore at my age. So in dollars, what is it? 7,500 to 11,250. So that's an extra what, Chris?
That's an extra 3,750. So half of.
So an extra 3,750.
Mm-hmm.
How many retirement plans, Chris? You do about 65 to 70 retirement plans a year. You've been doing this with me for 12 years, maybe. Granted, probably heavily since my stroke in 2025. So for the last 5 years, Chris has been heavily involved with about 60 to 70 plans a year, which comes to about 300, 350 plans. How many of those plans resulted in you telling the plan person, if you only saved an additional $3,750 at age 60, 61, 62, and 63, you'd be set right now and you could retire. But because you didn't do that, you can't spend on fun or you can't retire. How many, as a percentage or exact amount, if you know the exact amount, has that ever happened?
Well, I actually have that statistic readily available. It's a nice
You track it.
It's a nice round number, and that and that number would be zero, because that's ridiculous, right? It's it just isn't going to move the needle. That's the point that you're making. It's just not going to move the needle that much. It's an incremental change, but again, it's not just money you put aside that's the benefit. That has its own benefit. But whether you put it in a retirement plan or you just kept it in the bank, there's not a big degree of difference there, right? The tax deferral elements of such a small amount that late in life is not going to be going to move the needle enough to put you over the top, for instance, or something like that. It's just not in the numbers. That's the frustrating part. I wholeheartedly am a critic of the low contribution limits for IRAs. I think it's totally unfair to the working class folks who are trying to save for retirement. That just because you're participating in a 401k, you're able to put in so much more than you can in an IRA. There's lots of people that either are self-employed and they don't want to go through all the heartache of setting up their own private retirement plan for higher contributions, or they have a job that doesn't have much, but they like work a second job with the whole idea that all the money from this second job I want to shove into, you know, for my future retirement. I've heard from these crazy guys on the internet that if you save a lot early, that really helps your retirement down the road. So I'm going to work extra hard in my 20s and 30s to do that. You should be able to shove a whole lot more into the simplicity. You know, it takes you, what, a minute and a half to set up an IRA at a custodian? The simplicity of the IRA, it's just there, it's a bucket. Why the heck do they restrict filling it so much the way that they do? It is absolutely ridiculous and biased towards those who happen to have jobs that have employer-sponsored plans. There should not be a difference for an American person, for an American citizen, right? Saving for retirement, which is what we want all of them to do. We want to encourage this behavior. There should be much higher contribution limits to IRAs.
That brings birth to my URA idea.
Yeah.
Remember URA? We haven't talked about URA for a while. Do you remember what URA stands for?
Universal Retirement Account.
That's my idea. Except I wish I was a Marine. I got to get some Marine to record, because a true Marine, they'll have that deep URA.
Yeah.
But I can't say it like a Marine. If you're a Marine out there, send me a recording of you saying URA or a bunch of your buddies screaming URA. And I'll give it to Chris, and he'll play it at certain times. My idea was, and I don't expect Congress to take this seriously. I wish they would take it seriously. Yeah. They don't have to call it URA. I think they need to get rid of this hodgepodge of 401ks, 403bs, 457s, IRAs, TSPs, all of that crap, and put us all on equal footing with one retirement account, a universal retirement account that follows you around from employer to employer to employer. And that and the rules are all consistent and the same. Not different if you have a simple plan to a 401k, to a TSP, to an IRA. It is just so convoluted and ridiculous. And I also agree with Chris, patently unfair that people in IRAs can't contribute as much as people with 401ks.
Yep.
But also, it is so much easier if people had one account with all the same rules.
Yep.
So I called it URA. I will give credence to Barack Obama's administration. They came up with the MIRA, which I thought was even better than URA. The capital M, small y, R-A. My retirement account, MIRA. It was short. It was a great name, stupid idea, and it died on the vine. Yeah. No matter how hard that administration pushed it, Google MIRA, you'll learn about them. I think they lived maybe 2 or 3 years. Chris and I talked about them years ago when they were around briefly, because most people who listen to this podcast wouldn't benefit at all from the MIRA. But what I was jealous over was the name, so much better than URA. Yeah. But hopefully we got a Marine out there who'll give us a sound of URA. Okay, let's see what chat said. Hopefully you guys got a little bit of thoughts, a little bit of deep dive onto that. Let's see what chat ended up doing. Oh, yes, it's time to separate casual readers of Secure Act 2 from the real retirement junkies. Let's break this down while Chris even tries to remember if he knows the summary. Ooh, he's calling you out. Okay.
For the record, I answered C before he even had a chance to formulate those thoughts.
He did get it correct. Okay. Option A, he said, mm-hmm. is false. Option A, the answer was effective starting in 2025. He was no. It takes effect. Effective starting in 2024 is wrong. It's false. It takes effect in 2025. Both Chris and Chat got that. Plans are required to make them. I'm glad it mentioned this because I forgot to. Just because you have a 401k does not mean you'll be able to make the super catch-up if you fall between age 60 and 63 by December 31st of the year you're making the contribution. Plans do not have to allow it. And Chat points that out. It says, my answer, C. They are available for employees who turn age 60 to 63. So.
Yep. So we're still tied. And I used a lot less energy for my answers than Chat did.
Oh, wait a minute. I think Chat is wrong. He says the reason he chose C, he writes, bam, or boom, not bam. Should be bam. Is it, who is that chef that did the bam thing?
That Emerald. Was Emerald. Bam. Emerald Lagasse.
He said, boom, this is the correct one. Starting in 2025, let me read this. Starting in 2025.
Oh, he got in trouble with embellishment. He should have just answered yes. C and shut up.
Yes. Yeah. He should have shut up while he was ahead. Yeah. I think he's wrong. He says, starting in 2025, Secure 2 allows participants age 60 to 63 to make a super catch-up contribution to their workplace plan. The limit will be the great... Oh, no, he is right. I didn't read enough. I saw 10,000. I thought he was saying the 2025 catch-up is 10,000, and you can put 150% of that in. He is correct. The reason I didn't mention it right now, the number is always going to come out higher than 10,000.
Unless somehow deflation happens and they reduce the catch-up contribution. There's this weird moot point rule where they change the math on the super catch-up, but hopefully we will never face that because something's gone horribly wrong in the economy if they've reduced the catch-up because of deflation.
But Chat is correct. Chat says the limit is the greater of 10,000 or 150% of the then active regular catch-up amount for that year.
Right.
So I saw the 10,000 and I thought it was going to take 10,000 and put 150% of that and say you can put 15 in.
Yeah. No, it's technically correct, but hopefully we won't ever have to worry about that.
Yeah. And that's why I didn't mention it, folks. I didn't want to be confusing.
Yeah.
Because of the level of the current 7,500 and the fact that you can put 150% of the then current level in, or technically the greater of that or 10,000. I thought there's no need to mention what Chat just mentioned, but because it did, now we share it with you.
Yeah.
Okay. So here, it's going to talk a little smack to you now. My final answer is C. Then he says, this is to you. I'm just reading this for the first time as well, Chris, so don't kill the messenger if his joke sucks. Chris, I hope you bought more. Oh, goodness. Chris, I hope you bought more to this than just your AARP card.
How does he know how old I am?
I have no idea. Because we're talking super catch-up. And then he ends with, and I don't mean your grandma's tomato sauce. Oh, super catch-up. All right, getcha. And I don't mean your grandma's tomato sauce.
That's pretty good. Okay.
You are correct on two things. Chris, your answer, and Chris got it correct. And Chris is also an AARP member. I have no idea if you are or not.
I am, only because my wife signed me up when we got the couple deal.
Oh, he gave you a compliment. It looks like I have a worthy opponent here in Chris. Mm. but please let him know not to get too comfy. I've seen plenty of hot stocks flame out faster than a non-vested employer match.
He's got quite the retirement humor going on there. That's pretty good. Maybe that's what they're good for.
All right. Yeah, exactly. All right. Let's get to the next question here, folks. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Give me a second, Chris. I got to open up the question window. Where the hell is it? There it is. So we got number three. Let me get to number three. I'm doing them in order now, but we're probably going to break up the order. Okay. Again, carrying along in a similar... You can see Ed's big thing was secure and all these little bizarre rules.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the next question. I will read it once. True or false? Someone who turns 64 during the year can make the super catch-up contribution during the first part of the year, so long as they did it while they were still age 63. True or false?
Well, our listeners and myself, we've already answered that question. So
you already know that.
Clearly false, but we'll see if chat, without being able to listen to your previous embellishments, picks up on that. I think they should, because there's plenty of accurate information on the internet about that at this point. So I suspect they get it right.
Chat got it right as well.
Yeah.
He says the key phrase you said in your question, during the calendar year, it doesn't matter if you were 63 at the time of contribution and turned 64 later, you're not eligible at all if you're going to turn 64 at any point during the year you make the contribution, which is what we have been saying. So chat is correct.
Yep.
He does say, and again, I'm reading this for the first time. Chris, I hope you didn't fall for the loophole of logic. This isn't horseshoes or hand grenades. Close will not count when you're playing for retirement rules. I have no idea. That was a stupid one. He was not very funny in his little haunting of Chris. Both you and Chris are correct. Although I will say your taunting in this answer was rather mundane and boring.
Yeah, you're criticizing the taunting now?
I'm criticizing the taunting. Ouch! Oh. Fair feedback, Jim. Okay.
Well, hopefully get a new topic.
A lot more. I'm not going to read everything.
All the questions in this whole quiz about catch-up contributions?
No, the first three were. So okay. Let me skip down some and get deeper in. All right, okay. Let me pull up the question thing again. All right. Oh, this gets a little bit tricky with Roth catch-up contribution rules. So let's get to that one. That's going to hit a lot of podcast listeners next year. I hope they're prepped for it. All right, so what question is that? Okay, so we're going to do a few on the mandatory Roth catch-up contribution rules. Mm. Are you familiar with those rules, Chris? Beginning, they're supposed to have taken effect already in 23. Yeah. The IRS postponed it for 24 and 25. And that's when people who make more than a certain amount, and I don't know that amount now off the top of my head because it's indexed for inflation, their catch-up contributions, not their elective deferrals, but their catch-up contributions must be made to a Roth, not the pre-tax 401k.
So now you're answering the questions before you...
No, I'm just describing because Ed gets a lot deeper into the question. I want people to know what catch-up contributions are. Yeah. Excuse me, what Roth. The mandatory Roth is.
Yeah.
If you could Google real quickly, well, nobody knows what it's going to be because it's going to be indexed for inflation beginning next year. But beginning next year, if you make more than a certain amount the previous year, if you make more than a certain amount, your catch-up contribution for the following year, so beginning in 2026 when this takes effect, they're going to look at your 2025 income. Mm-hmm. If it was greater than a certain amount, which will be adjusted for inflation each year, and I don't think they released what that number is going to be yet for next year.
The original amount was 145. So if you're 50 or older and your FICA wages from a single employer exceeded 145 in the prior calendar year, any catch-up contributions have to be made to your employer-sponsored plan must be made to a Roth on an after-tax basis. Right. So that'll be indexed, that 145.
So that's the next series of questions are going to cover this. So far, so good?
So far, so good.
Okay. So let me get ready for the first question related to mandatory Roth. Multiple choice question. The Secure Act 2.0 mandatory Roth catch-up contribution rule applies to which type of employer plans? A, 401k, 403b, and all 457b plans. B, 401k, 403b, and simple IRA plans. C, 401k, 403b, and governmental 457b plans only. Or D, 401k, 403b, and non-governmental 457b plans only.
This one's fairly nuanced.
That's a tough one if you didn't go to Ed's.
Yeah, this is fairly nuanced. Yeah, I didn't. I will make my best logical guess as chat is thinking. So it's not the option with the simple IRA because that's going to play mostly under IRA rules. So we can eliminate that one. So then it comes down to 401k and 403bs clearly are in there because they're listed in all the three other answers. But then it's all 457s or just governmental 457s or non-governmental 457s. So for those of you who may not know, non-governmental 457s kind of have their own batch of rules. So I'm going to say what the three that are most like one another that should fall under this rule are going to be 401k, 403bs, and governmental 457s. Are going to fall under this mandatory rule. So whichever option that was, I think it was maybe C, that was that triple, those three, whichever answer that was is the answer I'm going to give.
Yeah, you're spot on, and I like your rationale, how you rationalized it. If you notice, 401k and 403b were appearing, I don't know if they were in all the answers, but I believe they were.
Yeah.
And Chris rightly pointed out, has something to do with 457 plans. And the non-governmental 457B plans, those are discriminatory.
Yeah.
They don't have to be offered to everybody. They're generally exposed to the risks of creditors, I believe.
Yeah, they don't have ERISA. They're not ERISA plans. There's
not ERISA plans. So Chris rightly deduced it must be governmental 457B plans, which also I don't believe are ERISA plans.
Not technically.
But they follow more set rules.
Right.
So Chris is correct. The answer is 401K, 403B, and governmental 457B plans. They will be forced beginning next year. And we'll dive deeper in on these series. I don't know if we'll get to them all on this show because this is going to be a two-part show. But there's several more questions on these forced mandatory Roth contributions for catch-ups. But many people listening to this podcast, you're going to fall victim to that. Mm-hmm. Now, it's quite possible the Trump administration will step in, rightly or wrongly. They have a reputation, if you will, of supporting higher paid people. Maybe they'll step in and try to encourage Congress to change this. I will say employers and plan sponsors are going out of their way to get rid of this because operationally it's a nightmare to track.
Yep.
And there are so many what ifs that it's just going to make this difficult. I get what Congress was doing when they passed bills. They need, and they, especially bills that are going to provide tax benefits, they've got to, quote-unquote, pay for them by getting added revenue. by forcing people who earn more than $145,000 is not that much. I read a lot of newspapers. I read one in Ohio, one in Colorado, and one in Boston. We read the Boston Herald all the time. Boston Herald online, I don't get the newspapers. Boston Herald has a thing against the city government. They're not getting along at all, the reporters in the Herald that I'm picking up on lately. And justifiably, they're pointing out a lot of the waste and corruption. It sickens me when I read some of the articles of what politicians are doing in Boston and Massachusetts in general. But one of the things that they do, and I guess it's all public record. I can't remember. It's been so long since I've been a cop. Your salary is public record. And whenever they talk about so-and-so from the city of Boston, so-and-so, so-and-so, they're really tearing into the MSP, Mass State Police, justifiably as an ex-cop, I might say, with a lot of shady stuff the MSP and a lot of their divisions were doing. Cops have been fired. Some have lost pensions. A lot of shady stuff going on. And I am not throwing cops under the bus. I'm a former cop. But some of the stuff they were doing, they should be fired. But they reference their salaries. And there are people making, cops making, there's nothing, God bless them, make as much as you can. Making $200,000-$400,000. I'm like, oh my God, I shouldn't have been a city cop. I should have became an MSP and stayed for 20 years. And then there's some Boston City employees and state government employees making hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of dollars. So what I'm getting at is $145,000 is not that much money when I say that. And granted, Massachusetts is a very expensive state. I will concede that. But when I see some of the salaries that these employees are getting, rightly or wrongly, it must be public record in Mass, because I never see Colorado articles when they talk about a city employee or a police officer or a fireman calling out their salary, nor do I see it in Ohio. So I don't know if this is a Mass thing. I share this only because I don't want people to say, oh yeah, $145,000 is not much money. I guess lately it's not in certain high-cost states like Massachusetts, and I'm going to guess Illinois and California, that $145,000 can be earned by what we would consider to be blue-collar workers. That's where I'm going with this. So a lot of people listening to this podcast or not listening to this podcast are going to fall victim to this and don't even know it. Mm-hmm. That they're match-up contributions are going to be forced into Rothification. Why? So the government can tax it now and get additional revenue.
Yep.
Okay, so let's get to, you already provided your answer, right? I apologize for that little divestiture there, but
oh yeah, we didn't hear if chat got it correct. I suspect they did because they could look it up, but it's a little nuanced. Maybe they tripped a little.
It did get the correct final answer. It said it does not apply. Blah, 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 blah. It applies to 401ks, 403bs, and governmental 457s. It does not apply to non-governmental 457 plans. Those are exempt from Roth catch-up mandate. Final answer, C. So you are correct. And then he calls you out. He says, Chris, if you got it wrong,
I didn't.
I'm afraid you, hold on. If you got it wrong, I'm afraid you just committed a foul. Again, it's getting really lame and it's taunting of you. And if you thought non-governmental 457s were included, that's like inviting your old high school buddies over to a TSP rollover. It's just not allowed. What is he talking about there?
That's, you know, the comedy has really trailed off from the early.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think it is thinking? What does it mean? I'm going to ask it this. like inviting your old high school buddies to a TSP rollover. You can roll over a TSP. Well, it depends. What is he talking? Direct rollover, indirect rollover, direct transfer?
Maybe your buddies can't be involved. I don't know. I'm not sure. That was a stretch.
All right, hold on. Let's find out here. Okay, chat. Chris got it right as well, so all is equal. But now I'm curious. In your taunting of Chris, you said, if Chris thought non-governmental 457 plans were included, that would be like him inviting his old high school buddies to a TSP rollover. It's just not allowed. Your words, not mine. What do you mean by TSP rollover? Not being allowed. Let's see what it says, Chris.
It's probably going to say you caught me in bad comedy.
It does. Yep. Now it's calling out. My bad. I'll read it as I go. It says, busted by my own metaphor. Smiley face. You caught me trying to slip a zinger in there. Mm-hmm. In that respect, it doesn't quite hold water the way I intended. Let's break it down and make sure we're crystal clear. What I meant versus what I said. Follow along, folks. I think this might be a little interested dive. Let's see if chat. It's trying to get out of something. It knows it said something that is wrong. It's bad metaphor. Let's see if he gets himself deeper in the hole, similar to what that guy was doing when it was asking him about the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. And then we'll wrap up today's show. In my attempt to toss some colorful taunting towards Chris, I wrote, that's like inviting your old high school buddies to a TSP rollover. It's just not allowed. What I meant to imply was, trying to include non-governmental 457B plans in the Roth catch-up rule is a misfit. Just like trying to roll over certain ineligible funds into a TSP. It's trying to save itself. That's what it's trying to do.
It's quite a stretch.
Let's see. By stretch. He says, but this is important. You need to understand. Well, I need to understand. I think it needs to understand. You need to understand. You can roll money into a TSP, but there are limits. The TSP will accept rollovers from traditional IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, and 457 governmental plans, but only pre-tax dollars. However, the TSP will not accept rollovers from Roth IRAs, after-tax non-Roth contributions, or distributions from non-governmental 457B plans. Don't know if I want to call it out.
So I guess my high school buddies are after-tax dollars?
Yes, I guess my high school buddies are is a lousy metaphor, but I'm just trying to see if it's digging itself deeper in. It's not just the TSP, folks. It's employer plans in general.
Right.
You cannot roll into employer plans after-tax basis in your IRA. You can't roll Roth monies into a employer-sponsored 401k, after-tax basis from an IRA into a 401k. So it's correct on that, Roth IRA after-tax basis. But it's saying distributions from non-governmental 457B plans. I have an issue with that. I know what it's saying. If you have a non-governmental 457B plan, most likely from a hospital or something like that, discriminatory for their higher paid employees like their doctors, it's saying if that doctor took a distribution from that 457 plan, it can't roll it into a TSP or by default, in my opinion, any type of employer plan.
I don't think you could take a non-governmental 457 and roll it into TSP, so I think chat's right. I bet that's not allowed because of the unique nature of a non-governmental 457.
I agree with that, but I don't like the way it says distribution.
Oh, but that would make it disallowed right there because it's not a rollover anymore.
Well, it could be a 60-day rollover.
Could be. But
you cannot do a 60-day rollover from a non-governmental 457. That I'll concede. I didn't like the word distribution that it was using.
Yeah.
A distribution implies the doctor, in this case, from a, let's just say it was a hospital, non-governmental 457B plan, and the doctor is taking a distribution. He's saying you can't put it in a TSP, he being Chad. I don't know if it's a he or a she or a it. But I'm saying you probably couldn't do it to any type of plan, but it's the word distribution that I'm fixated on. It should have said 60-day rollover, because once you, to me, once you do a distribution, you took the money. And it kind of ruined a lot of being able to do things, because most employer plans are not going to let you do a 60-day rollover, I don't think, into. I think they're going to want a trustee to trustee. I believe that the tax code allows it, but I've never seen an employer plan accept a check from you and you saying, hey, put this $60,000 into my 401k. It represents a 60-day rollover from my IRA, and I hereby swear there is no after-tax contributions in it.
Well, here's a surprise for you. I'm right on the TSP website right now, because I was seeing if they would call out the non-governmental 457s. And listen to this. We will accept both direct and indirect rollovers of tax-deferred money from traditional IRAs, simple IRAs, and eligible employer plans, such as a 401k or 403b, to the traditional balance of your account. We will accept direct rollovers of qualified and non-qualified Roth distributions from Roth 401ks, Roth 403bs, and Roth 457bs to the Roth balance of your account. If you don't already have a Roth balance in your existing TSP account, the rollover will create one. They will take Roth. They won't take after-tax basis in a traditional, I bet, but they'll take Roth.
And notice they said direct rollover. That means no 60-day rollover. You can't touch the money.
Yep.
Which also makes me say, when it said distributions, that definitely implies you the money was distributed to you, you touched it. So you're trying to do it as a 60-day rollover. I don't know of any employer plan, TSP or not. And if you're an advisor, listen to this, or if you're a DIYer, have you ever done a 60-day rollover into? I've done 60-day rollovers from, but have you ever, which does mandate a 20% automatic withholding from an employer-sponsored plan, especially a 401k, but have you ever done a 60-day rollover into? I don't think you can. I just don't see that ever happening. So anyways,
on the traditional balance, the TSP will handle an indirect rollover.
I'm going to call it out with what you just said, yeah. That
but the Roth, Chris, it calls it out. It says, we do not accept indirect rollers of Roth money and do not accept either type of rollover from a Roth IRA. So you can't roll Roth IRA into your TSP, but if you had Roth 401k, 403b, et cetera, you can actually do.
Well, then Chad is right, because Chad calls that out. It says Roth IRA rollovers are not allowed. So correct. Chad is correct.
Yeah.
But it's still, I don't like that word distribution. But anyways, yeah, anyway. I digress. So that's just us trying to go down a little bit of a rabbit hole here, folks. And if you disagree with what Chris and I are chatting about, no pun intended, because we have ChatGPT doing this, but, you know, by all means, share it with us. We're trying to learn as well. But I don't like the way it worded distribution, because that implies you have to do it as a 60-day rollover, or what the TSP's website called a direct and indirect rollover. And I think it specifically called out one of those two in that little tirade you read. An indirect rollover is a 60-day rollover.
Right.
A direct rollover goes from the account to the plan. An indirect rollover is what we all call a 60-day rollover. It goes from the account to you and from you to the plan. I don't know of any plans that will accept an indirect rollover or a 60-day rollover to the plan, because they can't track it and people would be lying. I know people, and they would be sending a check for $500,000. Trust me, this came from my IRA. It's all right, put it in there. I just don't see them doing that. And that's why I paused on when it said the TSP does not accept distributions from non-governmental 57 plans. I just wish it would have worded it as TSP does not accept 60-day rollovers from non-governmental 57 plans. Okay. Well, back to chat. My attempt at trash-talking Chris was referencing the tight restrictions on TSP rollovers, especially compared to more flexible IRAs or 401ks. Well, now it's digging itself in a hole again because 401ks pretty much have that same series of rules that it was saying. So was I being a little forced? Sure. What I should have said, what I should have said to taunt Chris was, and it's like it wants a second try, that's like trying to roll a Roth IRA into a TSP. It's just not allowed.
That's better.
It's not allowed into a 401k at all. Okay. So we'll pause there. I thought that was interesting, a little deep dive into a few of these things. We're going to spend more time when we come back. I think Ed has about another two or three questions on this age 50 mandatory catch-up contribution going into Roths beginning next year for people who earned more. Now, it's adjusted for inflation, but 2 years ago it was $145,000. Right. I don't know what it is today. And again, when I say 145 is not much, I'm just saying, depending on where you live in this country, you could be in a few high-cost states. Police officers and teachers in Massachusetts, I'm going to guess Connecticut, Illinois, New York, California, very expensive states to live in. I guarantee you those blue-collar workers, people that Congress, I don't think we're really going after, but are going to fall victim to this. A lot of people are not going to be able to put their catch-up contributions into the regular, the deductible, if you will, 401ks. They're going to be forced to put that catch-up contributions and the sister super catch-up contribution into the Roth option. And that might not be beneficial to people who may be earning quite a bit today. Congress, for some reason, 2 years ago, thought 145 was high enough to probably exempt blue-collar regular workers. I'm trying to say, not at least in Massachusetts, according to the Herald, who calls out the salary of all these city employees, it's not that much money. And a lot of people are going to fall victim to it. So you DIYers, pay attention next week. Because again, I say all the time, you're the vanguard. Not because I call you VGers, that means VG, Vanguard Engineer. It means you're a vanguard, you manage your own money, an engineer, you geek out on spreadsheets and investing and all of that. You're VGers. I'm saying you're at the vanguard to people coming to you for advice. You need to know these rules. And for yourself, many of you do earn easily more than $145,000. And index for inflation, we might be at 152, 153 next year, maybe 155 the most. Many of you already make more than that. And if you're used to putting in your catch-up contribution and your super catch-up contribution into the pre-tax 401k, because yeah, maybe you're like some of those police officers who were pulling in $200, $250, $300, $400,000. And they're going to be, I can guarantee you, in a much lower tax bracket when they retire.
They want
You're
to
going
defer.
To be surprised yeah. that, hey, this is no good anymore. I don't know if I should put this in. I don't know. You're going to have to think that through. It's not going to be as big a bang for the buck as you were hoping when you thought you would be able to get it in with perhaps a 28 or 37% tax bracket deduction and then convert it to a Roth later in retirement in the 22 or 23 or 24 bracket, whatever bracket is in existence in the future. So anyways, that's the next series of questions we're going to pick up right there, Chris. And I think this chat, I give kudos to the person who suggested this because chat is doing a lot of the deep dives. And it's allowing Chris and I to also proof what it's saying. I would say overall, I think it got a little carried away with the metaphor and this TSP thing, because much of what it was saying was a limit on the TSP is also a limit on employer-sponsored 401ks, not just the TSP. But overall, I would give Chat a good B plus to A minus. It was correct on everything. What do you feel?
Yeah, so far we're tied, so it's holding its own. Although well, I will point out
that's
to
kudos to you. Chat has the power of the entire internet. We thought it was going to get tripped up, and the author of that email thought it was going to get tripped up by all the bad information on the internet.
So far,
but
it
so
hasn't.
Far, except for that TSP little metaphor thing where it was digging itself in a hole and trying to get out of it, I think it's been doing pretty good and avoiding a lot of the misinformation. That said, the podcast listener who emailed me a couple of weeks ago, the thread with Chat, but I am using ChatGPT 5.0 with the thinking module turned on. So it's going to spend a little bit more time thinking about its answer. So far, I'm fairly impressed right now.
Well, good. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. Now you know where we're headed for next EDU show. We've got a Q&A show coming up in between later this week. If you want to send in your own questions, send them in to Jim. Jim@jimhelps.com is the email address. That's jimhelps.com. Put in the subject line, it's a question for the podcast, and include a couple words as to the topic. And, yeah, these quizzes are kind of fun, and I think the little twist with Chat playing along is good. It so far hasn't hallucinated on us or anything like that. So that's kudos to Chat, I guess we'll say. So Jim, take care. I'm sure you're headed back out into your garden to do some tending, and I will see you tomorrow. We've got some meetings together tomorrow. So
you and I will be meeting together. I'll see you promptly around 10 a.m. When I go to the office, I usually stop at Dunkin' Donuts to get an iced coffee for Chris and I. No, you're Chris. For Jacob and I. I don't get one for Joe. She doesn't drink coffee. And I don't think Keely can drink coffee. So do you want an iced coffee along with Jacob and I or not?
I think no. I will have consumed what coffee I would consume for the day well before 10 o'clock.
I can get you decaf.
So, no, I think I'm good. But thank you. Then I appreciate it.
For Jacob and I, he gets so excited.
He loves Dunkin'. He loves Dunkin'.
The kid, oh my God. The kid just... He'd mainline Dunkin' Donuts coffee if he could. He just, I don't know. Never met anyone who didn't grow up in Massachusetts who loves Dunkin' Donuts, or Dunkin' now as it's called, as much as he does. I told him, I says, dude, you got to go to Massachusetts where they're literally, you can be at an intersection. There's one on the left side of the intersection. There's one on the right side. There's no having to turn around. They are everywhere in Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's funny.
Well, all right.
Sounds good.
I will chat with everybody next week.
Okay. Everybody take care. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's jimhelps.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.